Welcome to the studio 2CBD to Mayor Margot Davis and General Manager Bernard Smith. Great to see you with us this morning.
Good morning, David and listeners.
Now, the first items for mayoral minutes, if we could have a bit of an update on those.
Yes, there were a couple of mayoral minutes that I put up this month. The first one was to support the Invest in Us campaign, which is produced by the Country Mayors Association. And really the purpose of this was to formally endorse that Invest in Us campaign and reinforce Council's ongoing evidence-based advocacy for fair and reasonable funding models for regional, rural and remote communities. Look, we've been advocating in this space to try and increase the federal assistance grants to 1%. It's currently sitting at 0.54%. And that funding would mean a lot to our Council, to managing our operations and our budget for the year. A lot of advocacy has been done in this space, but now it's good to see country mayors come to the party and put out a campaign that we unanimously endorse to support. The second one was around supporting the community service obligation on banks to fund face-to-face banking in regional Australia. Now, this has been this is another campaign that's being put on by the Regional Banking Investment Alliance, and the purpose really is to endorse that community service obligation. And the idea behind it is that the big four banks pay a levy, and that levy is there to support and help fund the resources that is needed to continue to have face-to-face banking support and services in regional retail outlets. So that's a really important one that we wanted to endorse as well. And I had a conversation with Regional Australia Bank, who are part of that alliance, last week with Deputy Mayor Carol Sparks, and that's where this mayoral minute has come from.
Okay, great. And it's certainly something that I think is universal in terms of need.
Yes, that's right. I mean, it's important that people can still walk into a bank and seek help and guidance as they need.
The next item 7.2, page 7 in the business paper, the School of Arts and Music Advisory Committee, terms of reference have been finalised, I think, and a progress report back to Council in 6 months, Margot.
Yes, the progress report was resolved in a previous Council meeting. What this report is about is, firstly, we wanted to appoint two councillors to the advisory committee as representatives on that committee, and it was endorsed unanimously that Councillor Vosper and Councillor Sparks go on to that advisory committee. The second part was around endorsing the terms of reference for the advisory committee. So fairly straightforward. There were a few amendments to make sure we weren't getting confused between advisory and a different sort of committee. So that's all gone through with some amendments.
Okay. And I noticed the building's had a paint in heritage colours
as well. It has. It looks fantastic. And we actually had a soft launch last week. So there are people already using the space, and we continuing to put some furniture in there, make it welcoming as you come in so that it's recognised it's a school of arts and music. And we will be, or the council officers are planning a official launch sometime in May.
Okay, and we have three committees of council: Aboriginal Consultative, Emmaville Mining and Emmaville War Memorial Hall, or having AGMs. Comment on that?
Yes, we had a number of committees endorsed last council meeting as well, and three more this council meeting. As you've already said, the Emmaville Mining Museum, the Aboriginal Consultative Committee and the Emmaville War Memorial Hall Committee. Council unanimously endorsed all of those committees, and we do want to thank those volunteers for putting their hand up, because without people putting their hand up to run these committees, they wouldn't exist. So we do encourage other people also in the community to get involved in community committees, whether they're a council committee or whether they are an advisory committee or whether they're a 355 committee or, in fact, a committee that has nothing to do with council at all. It's really important that it's not the same people putting their hand up all the time. So I do encourage those that do have a little bit of spare time. I know that's probably rare these days, but to, you know, have a look at all the committees that are out there in our community and put your hand up to help out if you can.
Yes, certainly. The volunteers are quite a big role. On item 7.6, page 24, Customer Service Improvement Plan, a fairly big report there, and comments on that, Bernard?
Yes, this is in response to a request by council to further consider this. Look, we're a very front-facing organisation. We're here to serve the community. We're funded by the community, and we need to ensure the way we deal with the community is as good as possible in terms of customer service. And that takes a couple of different forms. It's the face-to-face interaction we have with the community, whether it's people coming into the office or we're out in the community. But also in this day and age, we get compared to the best service people get elsewhere from other agencies, from other organisations. And I think there is a growing expectation as well that people can interact with us digitally, you know, whether it's to check on their rate payments or other information. And that will be introduced later on this year as part of a new business system. So customer service isn't just over the counter. That's critically important. It's all those other mechanisms, other ways we're able to deal with the community. So we're certainly putting a focus on that.
So I guess, for example, if someone has a road issue, particularly a safety issue, they can email the roads at GISC, etc. And there'd generally be a timeline for some sort of response.
Yes, that's right. And the most important thing too is that response. You know, we cannot meet everyone's requests. We cannot meet everyone's answer everyone's questions the way they would like. But in the first instance, the most important thing is a timely response.
And moving on, item 7.7, page 29, the investment report, Bernard.
Yes, this is a report, a very important report we put to council every month. It tracks our investments. It effectively, it tracks the amount of money we have. That is in the form of term deposits and also cash at hand so we can pay our monthly bills. There's been a particular focus by council on this report in recent times, and it's something we're doing a lot of hard work on because, yeah, we do have some challenges there.
So currently 16.2 million, I take it, in term deposits at the end of the reporting month. Thanks, Bernard.
Yes, and I'll just add to that. It also reports our unrestricted cash position, which does fluctuate, but having taken out the external loan and the internal loan approved by the minister, we're really trying to look at how cash flow management is managed. What comes in, what comes out, where is our, we must stay in the, we must not have a negative unrestricted cash balance. That is super critical. So I put up an amendment on this report to turn it into, because there's nothing wrong with the report as it stands when it's investments only, but what we would like to see as councillors is this turned into and developed into a cash and investments report, one where we have a little bit more understanding of cash movements and cash balances. So council staff have done some work on cash flow management in the background. We are having a workshop to deep dive into that very soon. So alongside that, it was good to put this amendment up to slightly change how the report is structured and make sure that we have a deeper understanding around cash movement.
Okay, certainly important. Moving on to item 7.8, draft Glen Innes Highlands Precincts Activation Framework and Strategy.
Yes, this really important framework. So we've never had a framework like this. I guess for the community to easily understand what this is, precincts and activation, if you think about it as a global town plan for the entire LGA. So this sits above master plans. So some of the things we have are master plans on our Centennial Parklands. We have the sporting master plan. This is a framework that sits above all of that. And what it's going to do essentially in the long term is set us up to understand where and how the community functions, what is where, how it all interconnects, how we can improve on that, what is missing so that we can improve the livability and form and function of Glen Innes Township, the villages and the LGA more broadly. How does that actually all work together? So it's a really important framework because it will set up for the next 10 to 20 years all of the projects that we would be able to start to tick off over that long, short, medium and long term timeline. So it is a really important framework. It is quite long. It's a long read. And there are some amendments that I put up in regard to how we define the precincts, because that's really important to get right before we go out to consultation. So we've requested that we have two layered precinct model. One is the functional precinct, and they're sort of more spatial clusters aligned to economic and community activity. So they sit around retail and employment, civic and community, recreation and sporting, tourism, arts and events, and transport and gateway. And then a second layer, which is a landscape or geo-region network layer. As our ambition is to become a global UNESCO geopark, and we're already a third pilot geo-region in Australia, we really want to make sure that everything we do enables that ambition to happen. So the second layer is really around the core geo-region area, which is the high-value geological, natural and landscape asset. The second one is the geo-region interface, so they're the areas that connect all these things. And the third is the geo-region opportunity areas, where it's broader parts of the LGA where there's greater capacity to accommodate development, including renewable energy projects or future mining, for instance, without undermining those key landscape values. So those amendments are going to be made to the framework. Then it will be put on public exhibition by the end of May. Then after that public exhibition, it will come back to council in July for full endorsement, with all the community consultation taken into consideration. And we're also going to start the next stage, which is consultation more deeply on the framework. And we're going to start that in deep water in June. So it is a really big project, but what it does is it does something that's never been done before, which is that global view of how our LGA operates and form and function, connectivity and productivity and investment. So it's something that we really want the community to consult with us on. The framework will be the first part, and then we'll be really deep diving with face-to-face consultation on, well, what do you want to see in the next 10 to 20 years? What do you feel is missing? And then underneath this then sits all the master plans. So then you go away and you do each master plan. And from the master plans, then you get them on the shovel-ready project list, and you start to look at each project and determine how you're going to fund that, whether that be through grants, whether it be through operations. So it really is setting us up really well for the long-term future.
Okay. Thank you, Margot.